Cool, we're live. Well, hey, not live, cool. But we're recording.
We're alive right now.
Yes, very much so. It's a Wednesday over here. Welcome, We Are In Media listeners. Today we have with us Ian Kreitzberg. Ian is a tech reporter for The Street. He reports on the tech industry with a focus on artificial intelligence, covering AI companies, safety, regulation, and ethics extensively. As an offshoot of his tech coverage, Ian also covers Elon Musk and his many companies, namely Tesla and SpaceX, as well as the companies under the Magnificent Seven umbrella. Ian previously has written for CNBC, CNBC, Patch.com, The Young Folks, and Screen Rant. I apparently cannot talk today, among others. And he has passionately served as a managing editor and editor-in-chief of a student newspaper, The Signal, until May 2022. Welcome to the podcast, Ian. We are really excited to have you here. I'm getting ahead of myself. It just, honestly, this just speaks to my excitement because I can't wait to tell our readers about, tell our listeners about how and why I reached out to you. But go ahead and say hi. Please shut me up.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here. I'm also excited. I was excited to hear from you and excited to talk about the story because it was interesting and a little unique how it came about. So that's fun.
Yes. Yeah. I don't honestly remember how I came across the story. I think it was rather organically. I want to say probably on Twitter is maybe how I saw it, but I like to follow along with AI and the companies in that space. Admittedly, I don't have a client right now in the AI space, but it's something I'm interested in. And when I came across the article, which for our listeners, the article is titled "New Platform Seeks to Prevent Big Tech from Stealing Art." That immediately caught my eye as a PR person because it's a PR's dream to have an article all about your client, right? And so I was like, I need to read this article. Plus, it spoke to my interests. And the subtitle itself immediately mentions the company that the article is speaking about. Kin.art is the name of the company. And the subtitle or the subheader says, Kin.art's goal is to help create a world where becoming an artist is as straightforward as a career path as becoming an accountant. And we'll link to the story in the show notes too, so our listeners, you all can go and check out the story for yourself. But yes, that immediately spoke to me and I was like, I need to contact Ian and we need to talk about this and how this article came to be. Jackie, do you want to go ahead and do the honor of reading the pitch that kind of inspired the story, which, by the way, was sent by the CTO of Kin.art?
I would love to.
Awesome.
I don't have the subject line, but
that's okay. We will get there.
Get ready, Ian. Okay, we'll start. Hi, Ian. I want to point out that after hi, Ian, there's a dash. So it's not like a new line. So on the same line, hi, Ian, hope you're doing well, exclamation point. And then it kind of goes into the first paragraph of the email, which I think is interesting because I don't know if you're, I imagine like me, then you're like overanalyze every line of an email. So that's kind of, right? Like, oh, that's, I could do that. Maybe I'll steal that. I don't know. But anyway, so moving on. I'm reaching out because I noticed you've been covering the intersection of AI and art and thought you might be interested in what we've just built and are about to announce publicly for the first time ever. For some context, we're a VC-funded team co-founded by Thiel Fellow and senior Silicon Valley engineers that's raised over $3 million to better help artists make a living from their art. As part of that mission, we've built a tool that allows artists to better protect their art from AI training than has ever been possible before. TechCrunch and several other major outlets have already agreed to our embargo. And then there's like a, I'm the dot with the comma, forget the name of that, I'm so sorry. We'd love to include you as well and let you cover the story as soon as it breaks on January 23rd, exclamation point. If you'd like more information and to test drive the product under embargo, I'd be delighted to share more, another exclamation point. All the best, Floor. I like it.
I really liked your attention to detail when you read that. Well, thank you. No, it's important because it speaks to how we overanalyze as PRs every single thing about a pitch.
And as people.
And Ian, I apologize. As you can tell, we geek out about the nitty gritty details here on We Earn Media. Jacqueline and I are just like, ooh, what? This is crazy because it's pitches.
Two exclamation points.
And they mentioned TechCrunch. Yeah. But anywho, let's kind of start from the beginning. Jacqueline, you mentioned that there isn't Ian hadn't shared a subject line with us, which is totally okay. Ian, do you remember what that subject line was?
Yeah, I actually wrote it down.
Okay.
I've got like post-it notes in front of me for little bits of information, right? The subject line was VC-funded startup invents new way to protect artists from AI.
Oh, I love it.
That is really cool. Yeah. I mean, it catches my attention immediately. As a reporter and who's somebody looking at their inbox and everything, Ian, I guess what stood out to you? What drew you to open that email? Was it the subject line?
Definitely in part. I mean, I'll go through, like, I don't usually just delete emails before I read them. Like, I'll glance, and if you can't pull me in the first sentence, you're probably done. This one particularly, I think, was a really great example of how timing is kind of everything. And ever since the New York Times lawsuit was filed against OpenAI, and before that and after that, I've been covering, as Floor says, the intersection of AI and art very intensely. I had written tons of copyright stuff, different explorations of where different groups, the artists versus the technologists, have issues with copyright and at what point they have it, you know, the input of the models versus the output. So this was all in my head and a lot of it was out there. And I think not long after I published one of these stories, I get this email saying, essentially, here's a new platform to protect artists from this issue that's happening. So that's the hook. I don't care as much about the VC-funded startup stuff. The second part of that sentence was much more interesting to me of how are you doing this, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, want to take a look at it. And so that was the big curiosity thing of leading me to, you know, engage with Floor more.
Yeah, one of our questions that we sometimes ask is if you've worked with that person before, but it all makes sense now. This stood out to you plain and simply because it was relevant to the work that you were not only focused on as your beat, but relevant to a story that you had just recently published. So that makes sense. And Jacqueline, I think you joke about this often, like just the funny timing of things and how sometimes it's so much out of our control because it all does have to do with timing, whether it's related to a story or whether it's related to when that person's looking at their inbox.
We hear it all the time. I mean, lots of examples like this. I would say, I mean, I'm going to throw a random number, but I would say about 25%, right? Doesn't it feel that way? 25% of these stories, it's always like, oh, it's kind of funny because like, I happened to be on an airplane with somebody who was talking about the same topic a couple of weeks ago. And I was thinking, I want to do more research on that. And then I get a pitch on it. Like that's one example. Your example is good too. Timing is everything.
So
I agree with that.
When was this email sent? I didn't note that in our notes here, but.
Yeah. So the email was sent on January 8th. So a week and a half-ish before the embargo lifted.
Okay.
Okay. And then the story published on January 23rd. That's a pretty quick turnaround, I'd say. And one other question that immediately comes to my mind about the pitch itself is the TechCrunch mention. We actually were just talking to somebody about this yesterday. If it's okay to mention competitor or competing outlets in your pitch, I'd say TechCrunch is a competitor outlet. And that's just my own opinion. I'm sure maybe somebody else has a different opinion, but Ian, what did you think about that? Like, how did you feel okay with that?
Yeah.
It's kind of an awkward question.
It was interesting. It's funny that you pointed it out, because that is also where my eye gravitates towards, because I get a lot of pitches. I don't think I've ever seen a pitch that said this specific outlet is also interested in our story.
Very bold.
Obviously, I see immediately, I saw what they were trying to do, which is to convey the sense of, you know, this is important because other really well-respected outlets are also doing it, so don't ignore us, kind of thing. At the same time, like, you don't necessarily love to hear that, but it's not horrible also. I kind of appreciate it. I think part of it too is because this was coming from the CTO of the company. This guy built the software, and then ongoing our conversation with him, he was crazily fast in responding to me and gave me huge long answers on stuff, which was awesome. He's very passionate about what he's doing, and so based on the context of sort of knowing Floor a little bit, I kind of understand that he's like trying to convey the urgency of what he feels is the importance of what he's doing. So I, you know, it's one of those things that I guess if I had not gone through with it, and if I hadn't gotten to know a little bit more about the company, maybe I would have been a little annoyed about that. But context is everything. I personally think in every situation, everything is more nuanced than, you know, anyone wants you to think. So here I think it's fine. I think sometimes it might just be straight up annoying.
Do you think that if a PR person would have sent it, you'd look at it differently?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's interesting. Yeah. Because it's, there's so many no-nos in this pitch, but because it's coming from the person behind the product directly and you had that connection with them, it went a long way. And I'd also say Floor's ability to be fast at responding also helped, and his ability to provide so much detail and give you a test drive of the product too. That's pretty exciting.
Yeah. I mean, that it's funny that you asked that question, cause I'm like thinking back to when I was going through this email, and I didn't realize at first that he was the CTO of the company. And at first I was, you know, I was like, okay, give me more information, but come on. And it definitely does change. I think part of that is because the expectation when I get PR pitches from PR people is A, it's pretty clear that it's from a PR person. And B, you know that they're pushing this out to a lot of people usually. And you can tell that. So in a situation like that, if this was clearly from a PR contact, especially if it was someone that I had a relationship with and they were like, hey, like, you better jump on this, buddy. TechCrunch is interested too. That would have probably been not the most wonderful thing. Mm-hmm. But here, this was just such a unique situation because he was just like very startup-esque of, you know, we just got to push this out. So the no-nos become okay in the right situation.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great product, too. I mean, the mission and everything. How kind of trans pivoting here, but Jacqueline, feel free to interrupt me if you have any questions related to that part of the pitch.
No question, just remark. I like to remark more than anything, but I like that this pitch isn't perfect, because I think it's just another reminder that, like, it really is about the story at the end of the day, like what you're actually pitching. And that sometimes, like you said, they're like nuance and context is like everything, and it's all good, you know? So that's all. Moving on.
Well, so the elephant in the room also for us is the word embargo, or interchangeably, sometimes the word exclusive gets used in that regard too. So whenever it comes up in a pitch that we receive from someone we're interviewing, we love to kind of dial in on that. Can you tell us more about what embargoes mean to you personally, Ian?
Sure. So I really look at it as a publication date. That's pretty much it. I don't have a problem with them, especially like I guess like all industries, but this industry is really highly competitive, and trying to beat people in terms of timing, I don't necessarily mind having an embargo because I know that at least, you know, me and TechCrunch or whoever will be going out at the same time. So I don't mind that. The exclusive stuff, you know, obviously things get sent to certain publications and because people want certain publications to break stuff. That's a different type of thing and also something I wouldn't mind. Everyone likes to break stuff. But in general, yeah, it's just a publication date. And like, it does also kind of take a little bit of the pressure off because so much of the work we do is like very fast paced, you know, writing to deadline of as quickly as humanly possible because we have to beat any list of amazing publications. And here it's just automatically levels the playing field. You don't have to freak out about making sure you get it before CNBC has it and before VentureBeat has it and whoever. So I don't mind embargoes.
Okay, awesome. That's helpful. I like how you put that into perspective too. How it's more of a published date or a release date. And we haven't ever had anyone say that it removes kind of a pressure as well, have we, Jacqueline? I feel like no. That was a new response for us. So that's interesting. Yeah, let's go. I love it. I get nervous thinking about pitching embargoes because of all of the bad stuff you hear. So whenever we get these productive bits of information, I hold on to that and I love it.
Yeah, we can be more strategic with them, right? When we understand like how we can utilize them like mm-hmm. properly, I guess, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Cool. Well, I think that's all I wanted to talk about when it comes to that pitch in particular. And we can move on to the housekeeping, more general questions if you two would like.
Sure.
All right. Yeah. So Ian, tell us about the pitches you receive. Do you receive a lot of them in general? And it sounded like you are looking at every single email or pitch that comes through pretty quickly. You've already answered that question, but tell us about your inbox, yeah. Basically.
I get so many emails. I get so many pitches. Every minute, you know, I haven't checked my email since we started, but if I checked it now, I'm sure there's a whole new list. and it's all, a lot of it is AI focused and a lot of it is people pitching, you know, this startup or that startup to talk about this thing or that thing. The things, and I use PR a lot. I think one of you mentioned it earlier where it's the thing that matters is the good story. And that's always what I'm looking for. And it's not always just necessarily like this company has a good story. A lot of what I do is trying to make sense of stuff that's happening, specifically in the AI world, which is super confusing and inaccessible. My biggest goal is to try and make that more accessible. And a big way to do that is to talk to as many of the experts and provide as much of their commentary on stuff as I humanly can. So the way that PR has been so helpful is, especially when timing is really great, providing that commentary from someone who might be a CPO at this company, but they have 30 years of experience in machine learning and they have this PhD and they have that PhD. And, you know, 20 years ago, they worked for the US government doing machine learning, whatever it is. And kind of facilitating these conversations of being straight to the point of, you know, Ian, I've read your coverage of this and I'm working with someone who can talk more about this, right? That has led me to legal experts about specific stuff, like, you know, the Taylor Swift deepfakes. That's led me to other general machine learning experts that can break down any element of AI that I have questions about. But discerning the pitches that are more thoughtful, I guess, of, you know, I read this coverage, I know this thing is happening, the topic isn't dead, the news cycle hasn't moved on yet. and here's my client, and you know, here's how they can help you provide more of that insight, because that's kind of what I focus on. From the pitches that are like, hey, Ian, I'm not sure, but have you seen there's this news happening, which I covered a week ago, and my client is the CEO of this AI startup, and they can help you talk about these things. That's less attractive to me because it's less thoughtful and the connection is more compelling.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Example one is like, yeah, they're doing sharing an example of your work, but they can tie it with depth, right? To an expert. Versus the other one is like, oh, I heard that if I reference an article they wrote, then it'll catch their attention. Like, you can't really game this stuff. Like, you gotta use your brain a little bit more than that. Does mean, but you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. What is sort of, so when you start working with a PR person and their pitch has caught your attention, what's the most helpful thing that they can do for you straight away?
Make a call happen. That's always, there's always like the funny phase in these things where I'm like, okay, yeah, you sold me. I'd love to talk to your person. And then it's several back and forth emails of trying to schedule. The easiest thing for me is if immediately after I say, hey, I approve, they respond with, okay, here's dates and times. Pick one and we can get this on the calendar. It's hard, you know, if they're like, what times work for you? It's like, I have time blocks. That can change really quickly if there's breaking news, if there's calls that other people schedule faster. So it's easier to just come to me with like, okay, yeah, let's get you on the phone. And here's when we can do that.
That's brilliant. And I like that because I feel like every time I try to book an interview, it is kind of a game of like,
yeah,
who's going to bring up the times first.
Right.
That's smart.
It is. Do you typically get on a call with them or are they typically video interviews? This is getting into the weeds here, but
it's good question.
Yeah.
It depends. The ones that are more, you know, I'm profiling a company. Often that'll be video. And part of the reason for that is sometimes they'll have stuff that, you know, Zoom is amazing. They can share their screen and show me their technology in action. Mm-hmm. I profiled an AI company a few months ago that they use machine learning technology. They hook it up to CC cameras to detect potential firearms. So he was able to share my screen on the Zoom and he was able to show me exactly what the software looks like when it is running through and detecting these things. So that kind of thing is hugely helpful. I love that the baseline expectation is we'll just hop on a Zoom or Google Meet. I think that's so cool. Other stuff, sometimes it's, you know, just a phone call. I don't mind a phone call. Sometimes I find it easier, you know, just give me a call instead of, okay, I have to schedule the thing. I sent you out a meeting link. The internet's choppy. Like calls are easier, but probably more video calls than phone calls, but it's a mixed bag.
Are you ever like same day interviews or do you need a little more lead time to prepare?
It depends on the timeliness of the reason I'm talking to them. There was actually a funny thing that happened two days ago, where I was, I don't know if you read about this, but there was a company in Hong Kong that was scammed with AI deepfakes, out of $25 million. And it was, of course, like I was going to cover it. I was a quarter of the way through the story and I got an email from a PR person who was like, hey, you know, I know you cover deepfakes. I saw this news happened. Here's this expert with expert commentary. And I was like, you can't understand how great this timing is. So that one was a kind of back and forth email interview real quick because I was actively writing it and pushing that as quickly as possible. And that was fantastic. So stuff when it's really timely, I'm like, yeah, okay, get me on the phone now or send me an email now, whatever's faster.
Do you mind if I ask what that person's subject line was?
In that email?
Let me take a look. Sorry, brilliant. We can edit this pause out. But I'm just so curious because that really is just fantastic timing. And I'd imagine you were very busy and focused on the story at hand. So to me, it's fascinating that you even just saw the email at that time and then chose to open it.
It was good luck timing. You know, I have my two screens set up and I just like glanced over as the email came in and I clicked on it.
Awesome.
And then she moved so fast. So the subject line is deepfake scams are becoming so sophisticated. Comments from deepfake expert, you know, the name of the expert.
Okay.
So kind of right to the point. And I'm looking at that and I'm like, I'm literally writing that story. Okay, let's see what he has to say. And then had a bunch of additional questions and I sent him over and I said, could you get answers to these questions back to me within an hour? And she said, yep, we'll have them to you by then. And she did.
That's so cool.
I was like, yeah. And that is tough sometimes because you guys kind of, you're the middleman between us and the people you work with. And it's not always easy to get a hold of them. And, but we're over here on deadline, which is a tough position sometimes, but here it was like, for whatever reason, it was fortuitous. It worked out. And it was just, yeah, it was really great.
Yeah. Really smart on the publicist's part. Cause they imagined you were probably going to be covering it, you know?
Yeah.
That's great.
Mm-hmm. So smart. Cool. All right. So one of our questions is, do you think there is a right time for a PR to send an email your way? It sounds to me like you have a pulse on your inbox at all times. So yes and no.
Right.
Yeah. You know, not a hard answer really for you. Okay. It's like normally I would say anything after five, I don't really... there's a higher odds of me deleting something if it comes in after five and I'm looking at my phone and something happens to come in. That doesn't mean like I never know what's in an email. So a bad subject line won't necessarily make me just delete it out of hand unless it's very obvious that you're just, you know, kind of scammy, pushing a product, want me to just, you know, give you free press for whatever thing you're pushing. But the funny thing is that, you know, I say that, but the email from Floor came in at 10:57 p.m.
Oh, wow.
That's late.
Right, which is late at night. I think he was zipping back and forth between this country and a different country, so there's like time zone problems probably.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That happened to work out wonderfully because I was already asleep by that point, and I woke up to that at the top of my inbox. So it's hard to say, like, I don't know that there's a right time. There's just certain times that I'm going to be less actively like, okay, let's look at this closely. Let's see if, even if the pitch isn't great, if there's still a good story somewhere in there, or if there's something I can use. Sometimes I'll just be like, I'm away right now. Delete or whatever it is.
Yeah. Like this isn't worth really. Yeah.
Right.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Good to know. I've definitely sent an email after 5 p.m. Are we talking Pacific time or Eastern? Just to
I'm on Eastern.
You're on Eastern. Okay. So what about what? No love for the Pacific people out there?
No love. No, I'm actually heading out to California soon.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I love California. I love the Pacific people.
Britt's a Pacific person.
Yeah.
Not California, though, sadly. Washington.
Okay. Yeah, so it all kind of depends on stuff, but usually, yeah, it's 5 p.m. Eastern. No love in my inbox for the Pacific people.
it's a good point, Britt. Like, when do you think about that when you're writing emails? Like at the end of the like near the end of your workday, are you kind of scheduling for the next morning?
Honestly,
what do you do?
No, lately I have not been. I feel like. I think about time zones more when I'm following up on things. I think about them less when I send the initial email because I feel like the follow-up might save me maybe. And if it were a more time-sensitive topic that I'm pitching, I would definitely think about the time zone. It's a very nuanced answer.
That makes sense though.
Yeah. So maybe that's a bit – and that opinion and that approach and that strategy – will change probably 2 months from now, but at the moment, I'm not really thinking a lot about time zones.
Yeah. I can totally relate to that. I mean, I'm East Coast, but just even thinking about how that phrase, the follow-up will save me, I think about that a lot. It's true, though.
You, I mean, I feel like yeah.
What right? about you? What do you think about follow-ups, Ian?
Another funny question. Sometimes they really annoy me.
Oh, no.
My Other times, the follow-up does save you because, like, there is so much that comes in, and sometimes I'll open something and then I'm pulled away and then it's just pushed to the bottom and I lose it and then I forget about it. So in those instances, yeah, like one follow-up I think is great if I don't mm-hmm. respond, because there's a lot of reasons why I didn't respond probably. And that doesn't mean I'm, you know, ignoring purposefully. So one follow-up is great. And there've been a lot of stories that I've developed great relationships with PR people that have started off with, I missed your first email. You know, I'm just floating this up to the top of your inbox. And I'm like, oh, thank you for doing that. I missed it. But any more than like past one follow-up, if it's clear that, you know, you haven't gotten a response, like that's when, like sometimes I'll get stacks of like 4 and 5 follow-ups and I'm kind of like, guys.
Come on. That's terrible. That's basic advice, I think, that we've gotten from a lot of people. It's good advice too.
It is. It's really good advice. I think a lot of people send more than one follow-up. So it's important to hear that again and again, in my opinion. You mentioned you referenced situations when you might have a relationship with that PR, Ian. What to you makes a strong relationship, working relationship in a PR journalist world?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's kind of the things that we're talking about, right? Timeliness, getting right to the point, having a good story, knowing when your client can help me, and kind of knowing that my end goal here is not to advertise your company, but to tell a good story. And if you can help me do that, right, then we're going to have a good relationship. There's one publicist that I work with probably more than anyone else in particular. And she got me connected with someone a long time ago who's a really knowledgeable AI expert. And most of the stories I do on AI, I send her an email and I'm like, hey, like I'm doing this story. Does he have any thoughts? And that's kind of our relationship now. And we've had other things where she'll send me, I don't even remember her initial pitch. It was so long ago. But she definitely sold the knowledge base that was her client. And he is so smart and just also fun to talk to. But adds a lot to the story, adds a lot to what I'm trying to do in terms of making these things more understandable. So, you know, if news comes out and she, you know, she gets to it before I have a chance to send her an email and she's like, hey, like I saw this thing, here's a preset paragraph of his thoughts. And if you have more questions, you know, so that kind of thing, or just being attentive, but also, I mean, it's tough and like everything we've talked about, right? It's nuanced. Because you don't want to be over attentive. You don't want to be sending me an email every 2 days like, hey, what about this client? What about this client? What about this client? Because it gets to be a lot. But, you know, picking the right moments, I guess, and showing that at the right times is just really helpful when you're putting that right story, I guess, first.
Makes sense.
It sure does. Yeah. Well, you kind of beat me to it, Ian. Do you want to go into your shout outs now and give kudos maybe to who you were just referring to or anyone else?
Sure. So the publicist I was just referring to is Courtney Collier with the Zeno Group. And she's been amazing for, I don't know, probably since I started this job. So kudos to Courtney.
Yeah.
Go Courtney.
Cool. We love this part of the show. Yes, absolutely. All right. Well, we zoomed through the whole list of questions that I had. Jackie, do you have any other questions for Ian?
No, but I've enjoyed like this a lot.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yes, thank you so much, Ian, for your time. This was a blast. Is there anything else that we didn't cover maybe or didn't ask you about that you wanted to make sure our listeners learned or heard from you directly as far as pitching goes?
I think you guys covered it all. You know, awesome. It's a tough thing and it's not straightforward. But yeah, I mean, I think the thing that I would say is the pitch doesn't have to be perfect. The story just has to be good.
That's a fantastic quotable. Quote. Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Cool. We'll end things there then. Thank you so much for your time, Ian.
Cool. Yeah. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Stay on.
Don't leave just yet. For a second. Don't leave yet, though.
Thank you for listening to this episode of We Earn Media. Jacqueline and I have a bit of a favor to ask. If you find the podcast useful and have an extra minute or two to spare, we would be incredibly grateful if you could take just a moment to leave a rating. Your feedback means the world to us, and it helps others discover our show. Thank you so much, listeners, for being a part of our PR community, and we can't wait to hear what you think.